Hey, everybody, Matt, Jess and Dave here.
Sorry, Jess, just butting in quickly to let the listeners know that I'm going to be in Sydney this week, coming up the 8th to the 12th of May, and you can get tickets now via mattshieldcomedy.com, then going straight to Brisbane on the 16th to the 19th. So tickets for my show Dryer Dryer in Sydney and Melbourne.
Sorry, Matt, I'll just cut you off there. I just need to tell everyone that our quiz show, our web series, is out right now. Do go on the quiz show. You can see it on Stupid Old Channel for free on YouTube. Type in "Do Go On The Quiz Show" and you can see three episodes right now covering topics like Google, Queen Victoria, the Olympics, and we got five more episodes coming up. So like and subscribe, whatever that means.
They are big topics too. And I said Sydney and Melbourne. I meant Sydney and Brisbane. Anyway, let's get on with the show.
I'm still here too.
Oh, hey, Jess.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, "What the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass!" So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Do Go On. My name is Dave Warnocky and I'm here with the best people in the entire world. It's Matt Stewart and Jess Perkins.
Oh. Hey,
the best people in the entire world.
I thought he was going to, like, it sounded like he was going to fuck us there, but he didn't.
I thought it was going to be the best people in this room, and I still would have been pretty happy with that.
I thought he was going to say the best people in the world, the St. Kilda Football Club or something like that.
Sure. They are the best people in the world.
Hey, when it comes to complimenting my buddies, I do not muck around.
Oh, I love that, Dave. Thank you. I reckon you're one of the best people in the world, too.
Oh, sorry. That was not as good as the best people. One of the best.
It's yeah, because the three of us are the best people in the world.
Fair enough, but arrogant on your behalf. Great to be here with you guys. Are you both well?
I ate a large piece of cake before I met you here.
Oh. Really? You didn't talk about that before. What kind of cake?
Okay, so I was meeting my friend Lewis. Lewis Dow,
fellow comedian.
Fellow comedian and cake eater.
No, because Lewis got a burger.
Oh.
Because he was hungover and only just got out of bed. And I had had lunch today, but I felt like something a little bit sweet. So I got a coffee, third coffee of the day, so I'm feeling pretty good. And then I thought, what's that you got there? Oh, a strawberry sponge cake. That looks delightful.
Sounds good.
I'll have a piece of that. The piece that came out was almost as big as my head, and it was amazing.
Wow, and you don't have a tiny head.
I got a big head.
You got quite a large head.
Yeah.
And also, some gall on you as well for bringing up this big piece of cake and coming here empty-handed, you motherfucker.
Did you eat it all?
Yeah, I did. I let Lewis have a bite, but I ate the rest. Yeah. So I'm feeling pretty good. I'm gonna have a sugar crash soon.
I'm not going to be able to think about anything but cake.
Yeah. Ask me how I am.
How are you?
Pissed off you didn't give us some fucking cake.
Well, what if I, like, after we do this podcast, we're going to grab some dinner. What if I buy you some dinner? I'll get you some cake.
Can we? We'll only go to places where they have cake on the menu.
Okay.
I'm in.
All right. I'll buy you some
cake. I forgive you, Jess, for something that wasn't really your fault.
Well, thank you.
No worries.
Matt, how are you?
I'm good.
You're wearing yellow pants, aren't you?
Sure am.
Sorry to pull back the curtain there. But
jeez, you do mention my pants every time I see you.
Yeah.
It's a weird habit. What's
with that?
I don't know. You got good pants.
Oh, okay.
No, it's always just that one pair of jeans that I comment on. But you're wearing yellow pants because you're a little ray of sunshine. And you look great.
These are Levi's jeans.
Are we sponsored by them now?
No, but I think he invented jeans. Did we talk about that in an episode? Or Levi
Strauss.
Learn that somewhere else?
Invented jeans.
Yeah.
Didn't jeans just sort of appear one day?
Yeah, when he invented them.
Yeah. When he planted the denim tree and they grew in a size small. Yeah. Convenient for me.
It wasn't until the jeans had offspring that we got the denim vest and the denim hat.
That was a mistake.
I'm wearing a denim jacket right now.
I don't see it.
She's lying to you, listeners.
I don't see denim.
It's corduroy.
Yeah, I'm cool enough to wear corduroy.
Are there denim hats? That was a bad instinct.
Surely in that photo of Justin Timberlake and Britney Spears, is he wearing a denim hat?
They're
wearing so much denim in that awful photo.
Yeah. That was like for Halloween or something.
And how he's still allowed to be one of the coolest men on the planet, I will never know.
Hey. And so is she.
One of the coolest men on the planet, yes.
She's allowed to be.
Yeah. Anyone can be cool.
Yeah.
It's just about believing in yourself.
Yeah.
That's the least cool thing you can do.
That's what Jess's mum always said to her.
Yeah.
And me. And, yeah, I appreciate that,
Annie.
She's
a good lady. She wants us to believe in ourselves.
She fills me with self-belief.
Yeah, she's great.
Even when I really shouldn't have any, which is most of the time. Yeah.
She's a good lady.
Now, before we hit record, Jess did say that this is her longest report ever, so she would get straight to it. So far we've ticked off cake talk, denim talk, and cool talk.
We're done.
I think we're ready to go.
We're good. Because this is like a Dave Warnocky length report. But it's an interesting story, and I just sort of got carried away, and everything that I found, I was like, well, that has to go in. Well, that has to go in.
And you wrote this before today as well.
I did, actually. But even before yesterday. Oh. Isn't that amazing?
I don't remember ever doing that myself.
Did you miscalculate the calendar and you thought we had to record earlier?
No, I had plans and knew I wouldn't have time.
Oh, that's really smart.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because if I have plans, it doesn't change anything.
No, so I was busy from about... Actually, no, I had breakfast with Mum yesterday and then was busy from
about... Oh, you did have plans.
From 1 o'clock onwards, then I wasn't home. I was not home.
There's always time for a bit of cake.
I was home, but I was... Anyway, yeah. There's always time for cake.
Imagine having your report written and then beforehand just eating cake.
Yeah.
What I like to do is panically write until you guys tell me we don't have any more time. We have to start recording.
Yeah, we know, mate.
Oh,
we
you know.
We've noticed.
I don't know if the people at home know.
I think they could probably tell.
Oh, I think people have been saying that my reports have been getting better.
Who's been saying that? Andy Matthews?
Yes. But he's one of our best listeners.
He is one of our best listeners and one of our best friends.
Most trusted listeners.
I trust him.
Because he gives me positive feedback.
But he gives
and
me...
I trust people who give me positive affirmation.
But he gives me realistic feedback. I remember recently I said something a bit fucked on the podcast and you told him that I'd said something fucked and he said, really? I don't believe that for a second. He was being sarcastic. And I was like, oh, I'm a terrible person.
Yeah.
Andy Matthews confirms. But that's okay. All right. So yes, this is my report. Let's get stuck in. And as per usual, a few minutes before we started the podcast, I went, fuck, I haven't written a question.
So you really shouldn't have had that fucking cake.
I shouldn't have had that cake.
Oh, can you work cake into the question?
Yes.
Great.
No.
I hope it's about Marie Antoinette.
Me too. I was really happy for that.
That would be so good if it was, but it's not.
Which Austrian cake lover?
Was she Austrian? I didn't know that.
I didn't know that either.
Well... Even when I'm not reporting, you're learning from me.
Yeah, we're always learning from you, mate. What not to do. Got him.
Nostrian.
Okay.
That's someone who lives in a nose.
That's terrible.
Oh, I was here thinking that was really good. Thanks, Dave. You're a regular bloody Andy Matthews.
I'm teaching you so many things about Marie Antoinette, about comedy.
Well, speaking of comedy, my question relates to it.
Oh, my goodness.
Who is the most famous comedian of all time?
What? Oh, interesting.
Jerry Seinfeld.
No.
Billy Connolly.
No.
I wonder if it's modern or old, because if it's old, I'm kind of thinking it's Charlie Chaplin.
Boom! Maddie!
Really?
Yeah.
Or if it's not him.
Yeah, who else are you thinking?
Sophocles.
I was thinking more modern times, I probably would have said Jerry Seinfeld.
Mm-hmm.
Billy Connolly. Is that what Dave said?
Yeah, those are the exact two examples.
Eddie Murphy's a big comedian. Steve Martin.
Yep.
Charlie Chaplin's
Chaplin's a topic that I'm doing, yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to look. If I'm going to have to... Are you going to make me go with one?
Yeah, I'm going to have to ask you to choose one.
All right. I'm going to say... Who's that guy who smashes fruit and then headbutts it?
Con the Fruiterer?
That's me.
Oh, Dave. Sorry, yeah, Dave Warnocky.
You're going to go with Dave Warnocky?
Yeah, he smashes watermelons.
The most famous on stage, comedian humps them,
and
then
headbutts them. It's the copyrighted move, the hump and headbutt.
What is that guy's name? Gonzo.
What?
The guy who smashes watermelons on stage?
I think you're thinking of Dave.
He did it in The Simpsons once. He's like kind of the butt of jokes. He's a bit of a weird guy. Starts with G. Godfrey. Gallagher. Anyway,
oh, Gallagher. Yeah, that's right. Actually, it is Gallagher.
Important. Oh. Important we got to the bottom of that. Thanks, yeah, Jess, for humouring me there.
But I'm actually going to do the report on Charlie Chaplin.
Great.
That's very exciting.
Oh, Charlie Chaplin. He was a comedian, wasn't he?
It's really interesting. Do you guys know much about Charlie Chaplin?
I know everything.
Great.
No, I don't. I don't really know much at all.
Yeah, I guess I didn't really know all that much myself.
Born in Austria, I believe.
I know that Iron Man played him.
Robert Downey Jr. played him in the 1992 film Chaplin.
Yes.
Correct. Oh. And actually, Jess,
did you
watch
that film?
I've seen it before. In my opinion, did a very good job.
Oh.
Yeah. But, I mean, Robert Downey Jr., he's very good. So, this was suggested by a couple of people. It's been suggested by Michael Gledson via Facebook, and also Angel Rivers at Riversaw, who tweets to us.
What a great name.
Yeah, so good. Now, Angel said their suggestion was Charlie Chaplin's The Great Dictator. So it's quite a specific part of Charlie Chaplin, which I will talk about, but I'll also just sort of, I will talk about...
There's a great porn title ready to be taken right there.
Ah, there is too. There's a very good porn title.
But I only do those on Patreon-only episodes, so...
Oh, come on, Dave. Give us a little taste.
The Great Dick Taker.
You are good at it. You are bloody good
at it. Is
that
a real one? No, that wouldn't be.
That's got to be.
A silent porn movie.
You know what?
In black and white.
Maybe that would be for the best.
With the little tramp.
Little tramp. Anyway.
Given...
So
you ignored his advice of going specific on The Great Dictator, and instead you've found a topic that's too big for yourself.
Good point. But I think it was interesting to talk about.
I'm excited to hear.
So a little bit of backstory here. Get your mind in the right space. Towards the end of the 19th century, which Matt, what years were that?
19th century. That was kindergarten for me, I think.
Sounds about right. The conventions of Victorian England had created a society that appeared well-educated, well-dressed, and well-mannered. But this society was on the verge of suffocating in its own prudishness.
Well, Jess, you sound very clever. I can't believe you wrote that.
Thank you. The saviour, in part, was due to a few square miles across the Thames, South London.
You said Thames, right?
I said it right.
Wow.
You didn't even bring attention to it.
And I didn't hesitate or pause. I'm doing so well today. South London was filled with more live entertainment, prostitution and drunkenness than anywhere else in England at the time.
And it still is.
Hey!
South London.
Despite class segregation, the rich and the poor came together in the music halls and the public houses. It was in this world that a gentleman called Charles Chaplin made his career as a singer. This is Charles Chaplin Sr., by the way.
Oh. Mm.
Meanwhile, 20-year-old Hannah Hill was also a singer who apparently did hilarious impressions of people she observed under the stage name Lily Harley. Such a good stage name.
But Hannah Hill's a cracking
Hannah
name
Hill's
in itself.
Hannah Hill's fucking great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Can't turn you back on that.
No. I've always liked the name Hannah.
Hannah's a good name.
Hannah's a good name.
It's one of those things, words that is backwards and frontwards.
Parallelogram.
That's right.
Dave, what are they?
They're called parallelograms. Fuck. Fuck, it would look so good. Fuck. Parallelogram. H-A-N-N-A-H.
Why didn't you believe me?
Because they're not parallelograms.
What are they?
Parallelogram. What are you guys? They're parallelograms are things that with equal sides.
Parallela.
You guys are definitely wrong on this, or am I being... It's called a...
Okay.
Parallelograms, like, it's not a square's a parallelogram.
No, what is it?
It's anything with four sides.
Anything with four, if they're, like, parallel.
It's,
opposite sides are parallel.
Yeah.
What has happened early?
Backwards.
They're
what
called
is that fucking word.
Oh, I was
I'm gonna
sure
know. I'm gonna do. Fucking kill myself as soon as.
Glenelg is one.
It is. That's really good.
Palindrome.
Palindrome.
No, I thought there was another word for it. No, that's not the word I was thinking of.
It's definitely palindrome.
Parallelograms.
I thought you guys were fucking with me.
Not fucking with you.
And then all of a sudden I started to be like, wait, am I the one who is crazy?
Palindrome. I thought, I'm thinking of a different word.
Yeah, you think you're parallelogram.
What I'm thinking of. Oh, man. Anyway, Hannah's a good name.
That was where we got
That's where we got that from. And I was so confident, wasn't I?
But you were so confident I didn't even fucking question it. I was like, yeah, that's what it is.
I was so sure. Anyway, Hannah Hill, she's doing impressions under the stage name of Lily Harley. In 1885, Hannah gave birth to a son, Sidney. To this day, the identity of Sidney's father remains unknown. However, 14 weeks after he was born, Hannah married Charles Chaplin Sr. 4 years later, on April 16, 1889, Hannah gave birth to Charles Spencer Chaplin. Charlie Chaplin. There we go.
So, hang on, is that the same baby or is that the second baby?
Second baby.
Right.
Wait, what? What do you mean, same baby?
Like, sorry, but I was just thinking that maybe... Don't worry, it's all good. I couldn't tell if they got married while she was 14 weeks pregnant.
No, they got married
14
after,
weeks after, sorry.
After
that's
Sydney
I got.
Was already existed.
Mm-hmm. So Charlie's a little bit younger.
Charlie's 4 years younger.
Gotcha.
A few years later, Charles Sr. was travelling around the US for about a year, and when he returned home, he found that he had a newborn son that he had not expected.
What?
Yeah, he came back and they had a new baby, and he's like...
A year later?
A year later.
Wow.
Wow.
That's a... Yeah,
it's a medical miracle, yes.
Yeah, it's a long pregnancy. Yeah, she's pregnant for over a year.
It's hard to let people know, I guess, back then. Could have sent him a parallelogram. But... They take a while to get,
so
get over the seas.
He left the family. So, he was like, this is sus.
This ain't my baby.
That's not my baby. He left the family and correctly claimed that he only had one son, so he paid very little child support. Because obviously they had Sidney, who wasn't Charles's child, and right. Then Charlie was his son. So it's very messy. The third son, whose name was George Wheeler Dryden, was fathered by the music hall entertainer Leo Dryden. And George was taken by his father, Leo, at 6 months old and didn't re-enter the chaplain's life for about 30 years. So he had no relationship with his younger brother.
Right.
Yeah, so Chaplin's early years were spent with his mother and brother, Sidney, in the London district of Kennington. Hannah had no means of income other than occasional nursing and dressmaking jobs. As the situation deteriorated, Chaplin was sent to Lambeth Workhouse when he was 7 years old. And the workhouses, from what I could sort of figure out, they were like places where people with no money or like out of prison and stuff like that, that's where they would go. Like they were kind of just housing for... Like, lots of kids were sent there, and it's not a nice place.
Because from the phrase workhouse, I imagine something quite nice.
No.
It sounds horrible. Mm.
The council housed him at the Central London District School for Paupers. What a weird name. Which Chaplin remembered as a forlorn existence, which I guess makes sense for a school for paupers. He was briefly reunited with his mother 18 months later before Hannah was forced to readmit her family to the workhouse in July of 1898. And the boys were sent to Norwood School, which was another institution for destitute children. So he had a pretty rough childhood. In September of 1898, Hannah was committed to Cane Hill Mental Asylum. She developed a psychosis, seemingly brought on by an infection of syphilis or malnutrition.
Ooh.
But she was committed, so. No, I mean, dedication, I think, is one of the first things you need to do.
It's the first signs of mental illness, yeah.
Yeah.
Over-dedication.
Over-dedication, yeah.
That's why I keep it loose.
Loose and free. You're aloof.
Yeah.
You're so aloof. For the 2 months that she was in the Cane Hill Asylum, Charlie and his brother Sydney were sent to live with their father, but they barely knew him because he'd obviously left the family when they were quite young. Charles Sr. was by then a severe alcoholic, and life there was bad enough to provoke a visit from the National Society of the Prevention of Cruelty to Children. So we can assume from that that it wasn't a nice place living with their dad either. His father, so Charles Sr., died 2 years later at 38 years old from cirrhosis of the liver. So from alcohol.
Booze hound.
Yeah.
But at least he was committed to his drinking.
And that takes guts.
Mm.
Speaking of guts.
Takes guts and it ruins
liver.
Your guts.
Yeah.
It fucks him up.
No good. Thanks for stepping on my joke there, fuckhead. Nah, good on you.
Oh, Dave. I thought this was a team game, Jess.
Dave, hold my hand. Dave, stop resisting. Hold my
hand. We set him up and Dave steals the jokes. You know how
Matt,
the team.
Make Dave hold my hand. He won't hold it.
He's holding. Thank you. He's holding it.
I'm
doing the minimum.
Clasped off his little thumb.
He's doing a minimum hold there.
That's nice. We're all okay. Hannah entered a period of remission, but in 1903 she became ill again. Charlie, who was then 14, had the task of taking his mother to the infirmary, and from there she was sent back to Cane Hill, the asylum. And he lived alone for several days, searching for food and occasionally sleeping rough, until Sydney, who'd enrolled in the Navy 2 years earlier, returned. So his brother's 4 years older than him and came back to stay with him because their mum was not well. Hannah was in and out of care for a long time until she eventually passed away in 1928.
Fuck.
So,
how old was she there, approximately?
I'm not actually sure. 1928. I'm not sure how old she was.
Assuming she was born in 1900, she was 28. But I mean, that is a big assumption.
Well, okay, hang on. We can figure this out. So she was roughly 20. Okay, hang on. No, we can do this.
Sorry.
No, I want to figure this out.
I want to know how sad this is, and I'd base my sadness on someone's death by their age.
Help me with the maths, because you know that's not my strength. So, 20, it says she was 20, and she gave birth to Sydney in 1885. So, let's say she was 20 in 1885.
So, she was born in 65, and she died in 28. So, that's 35 plus 28, Dave.
63.
So, not bad. In the olden days, that's...
Good innings.
Yeah.
But not
still
a great
young.
Life.
Yeah.
Okay. So, Matt, how tough sad life. Are you? How sad are you?
I'm still pretty sad about it.
Yeah?
Yeah, that does... That sounds like a sad story.
Yeah, just like I had no idea of such a rough upbringing. Between his time in the pauper schools and his mother becoming quite ill, Charlie began to perform on stage. He later recalled making his first amateur appearance at the age of 5 when he took over from Hannah one night in Aldershot. I don't really know the context of how he took over, but he was performing at about 5. By the time he was 9...
Mum, I've got this.
Yeah, don't worry. I'll do the impressions tonight, Mum.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. I don't know why I'm American and I'm young, but I'm here.
But I'm here.
You're an impressionist, that's why.
That's right.
And that is my impression of a young American. Next.
By the time he was 9, Charlie had, with his mother's encouragement, grown interested in performing. And through his father's connections, Charlie became a member of the 8 Lancashire Lads clog dancing troupe.
That sounds sick. I want in.
So good.
Well, thank God his dad had a connection to that.
Yeah,
big break.
You got to get into the clog dancing.
Big break.
I wonder if they're still going. If our English listeners can let me know.
I don't think they are. And
how are there any English people listening?
No, it's none of them.
Dad, do you reckon your dad would have any connections, Matt, to get you into the clogs?
If he's been holding out on me this long,
this whole time,
I'd be furious.
Secret yeah. clog dancer.
I would genuinely be pissed off. If he's off clogging and holding that back from me, I'd be furious. I can't see that being the case.
He knows that that's something you would want to do.
Yes.
He couldn't hold that back from you. If he could claim ignorance, then you could maybe understand. But in this case, I mean, you talk about clog dancing.
I live to clog. I clog to live. which is hard because I don't have clogs or access to a clog lad crew.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately.
Well, if your dad's been clogging and he's not been telling you, he deserves a flogging. That's all I'm saying.
Hard.
He's clogging for a flogging.
He is clogging. And it is really hard to become a top line clogger without clogs and without clog mates.
Yeah.
Are you confusing jogging with clogging?
Which one's which?
Jogging's much cheaper because you don't need any specific footwear.
You kind of do.
Joggers?
Oh. You need joggers. You need access to joggers.
Can't really do that in flip-flops, can you?
I do.
I know you do. You're a bloody renegade.
I've got really sore feet all the time.
So anyway, with this clog dancing troupe, he toured English music halls throughout 1899 and 1900.
Do you reckon he had to beat off the women because he's just...
He's a child.
But he's also a clogger.
Early teens.
Why would he be beating them off?
Oh, good. Charlie worked hard.
Come here, I've got a clog.
Charlie worked hard and the act was very popular with audiences, but he was not,
including women.
He was not satisfied with dancing and wished to form a comedy act. In the years...
As if clogging isn't funny enough.
In the years that Charlie was touring with the 8 Lancashire Lads, his mother ensured that he still attended school, but by age 13 he'd abandoned his education. He supported himself with a range of jobs while nursing his ambition to become an actor. At 14, shortly after his mother's relapse, he registered with a theatrical agency in London's West End. The manager sensed potential in Chaplin. He was like, you're going to be a star, kid. It's the early 1900s. Anyway, this person was ahead of their time and spoke like it was the 40s. And Charlie was promptly given his first role as a newsboy in Jim, A Romance of Cocaine, which sounds fantastic.
Also lends its name to a porn title quite well.
Yep.
But once again, I only do those on the Patreon episodes.
Dave, come on, mate. Come on.
Come on, mate. A Romance of Cocaine. Come on, mate. What do you got for us?
I can't see any obvious ins here, so good luck.
Interesting.
Belomance of Cocaine.
I mean, he's bloody good.
Blomance.
Of Cocaine.
Of Cocaine.
So the play opened in July of 1903.
And he's newsboy.
He's newsboy.
What a role.
The show was unsuccessful and it closed after 2 weeks. Oh. Chaplin's comic performance, however, was singled out for praise in many of the reviews. So even though it was a dud, he was still a star.
Newsboy was a star.
Newsboy stole the show. The director of that play secured a role.
I've got your paper here.
Oh, he's very good. Governor, I've got your paper.
And your cocaine.
Is that... Yeah, so in your porn spin-off, I guess the paper boy comes around. He knocks on the door. He said, I've got news for you.
Like,
Zips his pants.
Well, we don't have a subscription to the news, but I do have a pool you could clean.
Why are you doing that with your shoulders while you...
Because I'm a single young woman left all alone.
Mm-hmm. In a big empty house.
Big empty house.
You want a cross trainer at the time?
Yeah, I've got a big empty pool out back. Well, I've just got to sell the paper.
Big empty pool out the back. That's not a euphemism, is it, Dave?
It's the 1900s.
I hate this so much. Stop doing that with your shoulders. Dave, you're too sexy.
I know.
Stop it. So, the director of Jim, A Romance of Cocaine, secured a role for Charlie in Charles Frohman's production of Sherlock Holmes, where he played Billy the Page Boy in 3 nationwide tours. He's touring. He's acting. At 16 years old, Chaplin starred in the play's West End production at the Duke of York's Theatre from October to December of 1905. He completed one final tour of Sherlock Holmes in early 1906 before leaving the play after more than 2.5 years touring, playing this character in Sherlock Holmes.
No longer a page boy by the end of his tour.
He's a page man.
There's a bit of a link back to a previous episode there. We did one about Sherlock Holmes.
Yeah.
And in that, we talked about one of the, Owen Wilson and Jackie Chan movies, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of one of those movies, one of the guys, like, he saw a sign. He's like, oh, would you mind if I use this as my character for Sherlock Holmes? It was like a clock or something. And then at the very end, a little boy, like, stows away as they're going to America, and he gets a little bit of dust on his lip, a Charlie Chaplin style mustache, and he's been Charles Chaplin the whole movie, and that's the big reveal at the end. It's so good. It's really great.
Spoilers.
It's an origin movie for both Charlie Chaplin and William Shakespeare.
Wow.
William Shakespeare. Have I been saying that the whole time?
No.
No. What's the other guy?
Sherlock Holmes.
Fucking hell.
I love that we've told that story twice on the podcast. That's how much we want to ruin that movie for you. Just in case you managed to avoid that episode, we just he was Charles Chaplin the whole time, just in case you didn't think, well, that's a bit of a weird thing.
But it
name.
Doesn't make any sense. Why? And no, it does. And I get it. And I think last time I told the story, I'd seen it recently. Now it's just a very vague memory from the past.
Yeah, now you're retelling just a story.
Why had you watched that movie recently? Why?
No further questions.
Fair enough. So after he left the Sherlock Holmes tour, he soon found work with a new company and went on tour with his brother, who was also pursuing an acting career by this time.
Oh.
In a comedy sketch called Repairs. In May 1906, Charlie joined an act at Casey's Circus, where he developed popular burlesque pieces and was soon the star of the show. By the time the act finished touring in July of 1907, the 18-year-old had become an accomplished comedic performer. He struggled to find more work, however, and a brief attempt at a solo act was a failure. So at this stage, he's still sort of working in, like, groups. Like, yeah, that's like the opposite of solo, so yeah, that but makes like sense.
Variety shows and the like.
Yeah, exactly right. Meanwhile, Sidney Chaplin had joined Fred Karno's prestigious comedy company in 1906, and by 1908, he was one of their key performers. In February, he managed to secure a two-week trial for his younger brother. Karno was initially wary and considered Chaplin a pale, puny, sullen-looking youngster who looked much too shy to do any good in the theatre.
I relate to this character.
Puny, pale, sullen-looking. Who?
He sounds hot.
Too shy to do any good in the theatre.
Mm-hmm.
I've said that about you.
Preach it.
However, the teenager made an impact on his first night at the London Coliseum.
Yes, I did.
And was quickly signed to a contract. He began playing a series of minor parts, eventually progressing to starring roles by the following year in 1909. In April of 1910, he was given the lead in a new sketch, Jimmy the Fearless. It was a big success.
Jimmy the Feelers.
Feelers. And Charlie received considerable press attention. He's starting to get a bit of a name for himself. Karno then selected this new star to join the section of the company that toured North America's vaudeville circuit, and Charlie headed the show and impressed reviewers, being described as one of the best pantomime artists ever seen here. His most successful role was a drunk called the inebriate Swell, which drew him significant recognition.
Their titles are incredible.
So good. The tour lasted 21 months and the troupe returned to England in June of 1912, and by October they were heading off on another tour. They're hitting the road. So he's like, he's kind of making it as an actor and not like making the big bucks, but it's his living.
Should be doing all right.
Yeah. 6 months into the second American tour, Chaplin was invited to join the New York Motion Picture Company. This is where he's starting to get his foot in the door in film. Ever heard of it, boys? You heard of film, yeah, Matthew? Oh,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I know it. A representative who had seen his performance thought he could replace Fred Mace, who was a star of their Keystone Studios, who intended to leave.
Oh, Fred, where are you going?
Fred, what are you doing, mate?
Well, you'd know where he's... Fred, obviously you know his name from the next project he did.
Fred Mace?
Yeah.
Yeah? What did he do?
He invented a new kind of horse.
He's a horse breeder?
Yep.
He invented a new kind of horse?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Yep. How do you invent a horse?
Bits and pieces.
Pop them together.
Yeah, stuff you found around
bit
the
of trial
house.
And error.
Yeah, it revolutionised. You know, you guys would know the Fred Mace horse.
Did he sew dead horses together?
Yeah.
Like Frankenstein?
Look, I'm not, are you guys fucking with me? I'm very confused.
You're very confusing. This is a very long report, Matt. Just let me get through it.
See.
So they wanted him to join Keystone Studios. Now, Charlie wasn't a fan of Keystone's comedies, but he rationalized that it was an opportunity to get into film and start a new life. So he met with the company and he signed a $150 per week contract, which in equivalent now would be about $3,600 a week, which is a pretty good contract.
It's good money.
And that was in September of 1913, so he's making $150 per week. So he's gone from... like having nothing as a child and then touring with these acting groups, and now he's making some good money. So he arrived in LA, home of the Keystone Studios, in early December of 1913. And his boss was Mac Sennett, great name, who initially expressed...
Was it Mac?
Mac. Mac Sennett. Sennett? Sennett. Who initially expressed concern that the 24-year-old looked too young.
Oh, I'm relating.
Yeah, you get it.
Relating. Have I ever told you about this? I got cast in an ad where the...
All right, mate. We've all got stuff going on.
Well, I did until I got kicked off the ad because the character was 18 to 24. This was last year when I was 25. And then the people who... Like, I was cast in or whatever. And then the people who were doing... Paying for the ad to be made, the company, looked at my photo and went... He's way too young to pass as 18 to 24. And I was older than 18 to 24.
I mean, I know that's annoying, but also, like, won't you be grateful for that when you're, like, 50?
Yeah.
That's what people say.
Yeah, they fucking say it.
Is that true, Dave?
I'm not 50.
Okay.
But I'll let you know.
We'll check in. Matt, you'll get to 50 first, obviously.
Obviously.
Soon.
Unless you catch me. Catch me if you can.
Which will only happen,
good
if,
luck.
Only happen if you die.
Which I don't.
Before
I don't
50.
Want that to happen.
Oh, that's very sweet, Jess. Hey, Dave, did you still get paid for that ad?
I didn't get paid, so that's why I was sad.
That's bullshit. So you understand. You understand.
I'm relating to this guy. Yeah. He's great.
So Charlie wasn't used in a picture until late January. During that time, he's just kind of... Trying to learn the processes of filmmaking and trying to sort of pick up on how they make
he's trying
films.
To learn how to direct.
He's like,
just doing impressions of directors. This. Cut! Is that right? Am I saying that right? Look, mate, just get off the film set. We're trying to film here.
Action.
Look, seriously, you've got to leave.
Cut.
Are you directing me? I'm the director. And that's how the student became the teacher.
So Charlie made his film acting debut in the one-reeler Making a Living, and it was released on the 2nd of February 1914. He hated the picture. He hated it, but one review picked him out as a comedian of the first water. Not sure what that means.
First sure water?
Water.
I would put that quote all over my comedy festival poster.
Comedian of the first water. Oh. I'm guessing... Just, like, you know when you're, I don't know.
You know when you're giving out water and the best water goes to the best people?
Yeah.
First water for you, but you get the shit water for the losers.
For the losers.
So he's first water.
Right.
Speaking of which, I'm going to have a sip of my first water right now.
Please
enjoy. You got first water.
Yeah, I've got third water in my cup.
I just got slops, which is, you know, it's sub water.
Mm.
But that's why I'm a comedian of the first water kind.
You are. For his second appearance on camera... Charlie created the costume that he would go on to be identified with for the rest of his life. The character, who became known as the Tramp, debuted to audiences in Kid Auto Races at Venice. Some of the movie titles are so good. This is so funny. And this is what Chaplin said about the Tramp. So he said, "I wanted everything to be a contradiction. The pants baggy, the coat tight, the hat small, and the shoes large. I added a small mustache, which I reasoned would add age without hiding my expression," which is a good point. "I had no idea of the character, but the moment I was dressed, the clothes and the makeup made me feel the person he was. I began to know him, and by the time I walked on stage, he was fully born." What an actor. What an actor.
Can relate to a lot of that as an actor myself.
Yeah. How so? Please do tell.
Because you've been on a few commercials and not been kicked off because of your young looks.
Yeah, I know. On all the acting work I do, I often wear small hats and big shoes.
You demand it.
I demand it.
They say, "But Matt, this is a scene set in a swimming pool."
Yeah, I say, "Too bad. Give me big pants, small shirt, please." And
tight hat.
And once I get them on and I'm in there in the pool, drowning under the weight of the clothes, I'm like, yeah, I think I know who this guy is. Yeah. He's about to die.
Yeah. He's dying.
Yeah, he's dying now. He's being resuscitated. He's splurting water back out of his lungs.
Mm-hmm.
He's in an ambulance. Like, I know who he is.
And at the end, the decal comes on and says, "Shop at Target."
Yeah.
Bang, nailed it. Another commercial well done.
Put it in the can.
I'll send you an invoice.
Yeah.
A triple, we agreed.
Also, a bill for the hospital.
You've made a significant loss on the job.
And it will not succeed at all. great. Yeah, so it's so wonderful to have two prestigious actors here.
Mm. Yeah, we can pick apart Charlie's early work. Mm.
Let me know if you have any questions.
Thank you.
If you want to get inside the mind of an actor, only too willing to oblige.
Thank you so much. Mm. That's very good. Very good. Mm.
Inside the Actors Podcast Studio.
Mm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I can't do it like you can. I can't get deep enough, I think. Do it?
Mm-hmm.
Just that... like, no, it's just one mm.
So low.
It's just the noise he makes when he's going along with my bullshit. I love it. Okay, so he's making movies. He's churning them out. He's making the films. During the filming of his 11th picture, Mabel at the Wheel.
Who's Mabel?
Well,
why is she at the wheel?
He clashed with director Mabel Normand and was almost released from his contract. Senate kept him on, however, when he received orders from exhibitors for more Chaplin films. Senate also allowed Charlie to direct his next film himself after Charlie promised to pay $1,500, equivalent of 36 grand now, if the film was unsuccessful.
Wow.
Like, he backed himself. He's like, I'll give you 36 grand.
He's gone for a... He's made a bet.
Yeah, he's like,
I bet you this
I
will
want
be
to direct. And they probably went, no, mate, you can't direct. He goes, if it's... Okay, let me direct, and if it's bad, I'm going to give you $1,500, which is a lot of money. And Caught in the Rain, which was issued 4th of May 1914, was Chaplin's directorial debut.
Caught in the Rain.
Caught in the Rain.
Needs more Mabel.
And it was...
Yeah, we need a place and a name. Everything else is Gary doing the dishes
the
or
place,
something.
The place is Caught.
Okay. Oh, okay, sure.
And the activity is the rain.
Surely In the Rain is the place.
Yep.
I can see that.
So that was his directing debut.
And he made a big bet.
He put a lot of money behind it. He really backed himself.
Matt, do you reckon this is going to go well?
Yes.
Dave?
I'm also in the yes camp.
You're both correct. It was highly successful.
He made it! Mabel, go fuck yourself.
He did it. Thereafter, he directed almost every short film in which he appeared for Keystone at a rate of approximately one per week.
What?
They're making movies. They're making a movie a week.
Mabel at the Wheel, Greg in the Castle, Johnny Does Something.
Johnny Does Something. That's not Dave blanking. That's what one of them was called.
Yeah. Oh, I've got the list of his filmography in front of me. I'm reading him out.
Johnny Does Something.
Kate has
just to save money, they actually started doing Mabel at the Wheel, Mabel Lost Something Under the Seat, Mabel Ducks Into the Back, Mabel Has a Look in the Boot. Mabel fills up petrol.
Yeah, Mabel gets some groceries.
Mabel has some Mabel time.
Oh, no.
That's no porn titles there, Dave.
That's moving into your industry there.
My industry. That's right, I am a porn entrepreneur.
Charlie's films...
Entrepreneur, sorry. I had to. I'm sorry.
No, never apologize. That was great. Charlie's films introduced a slower form of comedy than the typical Keystone farce that they were used to, and he developed quite a large fan base because of this. In November of 1914, he had a supporting role in the first feature-length comedy film, Tilly's Punctured Romance. Directed by Sennett and starring Marie Dressler, it was a commercial success and increased his popularity. When Charlie's contract came up for renewal at the end of the year, he asked for $1,000 a week, which would have been equivalent of 24 grand.
A week?
A week.
That would make you a millionaire.
Yeah. And Sennett refused as it was too much money. So at this time, the SNA Film Manufacturing Company of Chicago sent Chaplin an offer of $1,250 a week with a signing bonus of $10,000.
Right, so even more than he wanted.
Even more than he wanted. So, yeah. So he joined the studio in late December 1914.
Plus, so that signing bonus is about $250,000.
Which would have made him a millionaire.
That makes him a quarter of the way to a millionaire. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
But if you worked for a year, you'd become a millionaire.
Okay. So this is where he started to begin forming a stock company of regular actors that he used quite a lot. So that included Leo White, Bud Jemison, Paddy Maguire, and Billy Armstrong. Such good names. He soon recruited a leading lady. Her name was Edna.
Are you laughing at Edna?
Yes.
Well, these people are old enough to be grandparents, and that's a great grandma name.
Edna Perviance? Perviance? Perviance. Edna. Just going to call her Edna. He met her in a cafe and hired her on account of her beauty. So that's a good feeling.
So acting ability, 100.
100. She went on to appear in 35 films with Chaplin over 8 years. And they dated for a little bit. Just for a little bit. During 1915, Charlie became a cultural phenomenon. Shops were stocked with Chaplin merchandise. He featured in cartoons and comic strips. Several songs were written about him. In July, a journalist for Motion Picture Magazine wrote that Chaplinitis had spread across America.
Oh my God, what's the cure?
More comedy.
Oh, okay.
That only makes it worse, Jess.
Oh, no.
It makes you feel like you want more comedy, but that's the last thing you need.
That's the last thing you bloody need. You know what you need to get over it? Just some fluids and rest.
Right.
The main thing, you know, just got to rest up.
Darkened room.
Yeah. And lots of water, tea, if you feel like it. Plain foods. Mm-hmm. Plain foods.
Twisties and Coke.
Just time. Flat Coke if you can. Yeah.
Plain food.
Plain food.
Mm-hmm. Wright Brothers was dishing it out, obviously.
Yeah, obviously.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
As his fame grew worldwide, he became the film industry's first international star. He's a star, see? Still too early.
We'll get there.
When the SNA contract ended in December of 1915, Charlie, fully aware of his popularity, requested a $150,000 signing bonus from his next studio.
What?
So he just kind of put that out there, like, somebody wants me, you can have me, but I want 150 up front.
Do you know what that's worth?
Probably a fuck ton, I think.
If one was 36, that's 150 times 36. Is that right?
If one...
1,000 was the equivalent of 36.
1,000 was 24.
All right. And 15, what he guaranteed was 36, which is 15, right? Don't worry. All right.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yes. 1500 was about 30 grand.
So, Dave,
it's a lot.
You know maths.
If he's asking for 150.
Just work it out. I'm really keen to know because that is so much.
Well, let's have a look. That's a lot of money.
So, let's say 1,000 was $24,000. And he's asking for 150.
It's $3.6 million.
Fucking hell. That.
I guess that probably, like in today's language, that isn't. Like
sometimes they would be 25 million for a film.
Yeah. So maybe he isn't being. But at the time, probably movies weren't.
That's
seen
just
as
a signing bonus.
Yeah.
Though.
Did anyone do it?
Well, he received several offers, including Universal, Fox, the best of which came from the Mutual Film Corporation, at $10,000 a week. On top of. The bonus, like the signing bonus.
Wow.
He's making 10 grand a week.
So that's $250,000 a week.
That was sort of their... So here's what it was. So a contract was negotiated with Mutual that amounted to $670,000 a year, which Robinson says made Chaplin, at 26 years old, one of the highest paid people in the world. In the world!
That's awesome!
He's our age, though. And back then, he's making 670 grand a year.
Right, and their money. Jeez.
It's insane. The high salary shocked the public and was widely reported in the press.
That is incredible.
Yeah. Apparently, the studio president, a guy called John R. Frueler, explained, "We can afford to pay Mr. Chaplin this large sum annually because the public wants Chaplin and we'll pay for him." So it's like, well, he'll make the money so we can afford to give it to him. It's amazing. Mitchell gave Chaplin his own Los Angeles studio to work in, which opened in March of 1916. And in 1917, professional Chaplin imitators were so widespread that he took legal action. And it was reported that 9 out of 10 men who attended costume parties were dressed as a tramp.
That nine out of ten.
You look around, you're like, what the fuck?
But also it says it was reported that nine, so it's like, who does that research? Yeah.
The 10th person's come as the king. And they're like, what the fuck are you wearing? This is a Charlie Chaplin party, mate.
It's insane. So Charlie was sort of, he was working on stuff, but he wasn't churning out like heaps and heaps.
A movie a week?
Not a movie a week. Because he wanted to make his own
art.
Work. He wanted to make his art. Bit he of wanted art to house. Do it right. Mm. And yeah. So eventually the contract with Mutual ended, but it ended quite nicely. They were very patient with his slower rate of putting out content, but it was, yeah.
Did he put out any bangers with them?
I think so. I don't have them listed here, okay. But yeah, no, he was...
Kate drinks a hot chocolate.
Yeah, because I'm wondering when he gets to the movies that we've heard of, which aren't, there's not heaps of them, but there's...
Yeah, what have you heard of?
The Great Dictator is the most famous
Great
one.
Great Dictator.
Yep.
Charlie Chaplin Goes to the Doctors.
Tramp Stamp 2, Back in the Habit.
Tramp Formers, More Than Meets the Eye. Yeah.
Anyway, so Charlie's primary concern in finding a new distributor was independence. Sidney Chaplin, then his business manager, so Sidney's just taken over as his business manager now, he told the press, Charlie must be allowed all the time he needs and all the money for producing films the way he wants. It is quality, not quantity, we're after. Very good, Sidney, very good.
Well said, Sidney.
Oh, Sidney, very good. In June of 1917, Charlie signed to complete 8 films for the First National Exhibitors Circuit, in return for $1 million.
Make him a millionaire.
That would make him a millionaire.
Even by their terms.
Even by their terms, he is now a millionaire. He chose to build his own studio situated on 5 acres of land off Sunset Boulevard with production facilities of the highest order, only the best. So this was completed in 1918, and Charlie was given freedom over the making of his pictures. So now he can make whatever he wants to make. So he joined forces with Douglas Fairbanks, Mary Pickford, and D.W. Griffith, D.W.
D-dubs.
To form a new distribution company,
United Artists. There you go, I just knew that.
How did you know?
I just knew that he was the founder of United Artists.
How did you know?
Trivia, I think.
Dave's a real trivia buff. Don't you know that?
I did not know that.
You didn't know that about Dave.
How's that not been mentioned in this?
It's weird. It hasn't come up.
In this podcast, which is largely trivia based, yeah. To be honest. Yeah.
Feels like it might have almost been the first
trivia
thing.
Trivia is the reason
mentioned.
For this whole show.
No idea. Yeah, you learn something new every day.
I think they were also involved in the Academy Awards being set up.
Ah, there you go.
Episode 3, 4, fuck.
Idiot. The arrangement was revolutionary in the film industry as it enabled the 4 partners, all creative artists, to personally fund their pictures and have complete control. Chaplin was eager to start with the new company and offered to buy out his contract with First National, but they declined this and insisted that he complete the final 6 films he owed them. So he agreed to 8 and did 2 and was like, can I just buy you out? And they're like, yeah. No.
Can I give you that $30 million back?
Make 6 films. So he's like, ugh. Like, that's so many.
Like, he drops his arm out.
Oh, Mom.
Okay.
I'll make 6 films.
Just grabs a pen and paper and just, here, I'm writing it now. Yeah. Guy goes to the shop.
Sounds brilliant. Oh, my goodness. That's exactly what we wanted.
We really thought he'd throw it in if he was forced to do it. But
yeah, but he's such a professional.
This is good stuff.
Guy goes to the shops. Why didn't I think of that?
Next film. Johnny does a poo-poo.
My goodness, pushing the boundaries. I love it.
I love it. This is fantastic.
Who is
this
Johnny?
What else have you got?
Can we have a sequel to Johnny Does a Poo-Poo?
Johnny sticks a fork in an electric socket.
Oh, my God. Oh, it says so much about society.
So much about comedy, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm.
I think of the death scene. It'd be hilarious.
Hilarious. The slapstick.
Oh, my goodness.
Johnny mails it in.
Johnny, so he survived. It's a cliffhanger episode. My goodness.
He gets stuck inside a letterbox.
Charlie, you've done it again. Give that man more money.
Johnny shoots his boss.
Oh.
Bracket, Johnny. Johnny is an allegory. No, he's not. Is he?
Yeah, that's right.
For me, Charlie Chaplin. The boss is the boss. Bracket.
It's a long title.
Yeah, lengthy, but I don't hate it.
But for you, we'll do it. The kids will love it.
This is exactly how the entire conversation went.
Spaceman from Pluto.
It'll never work. That's where I draw the line, Charlie. That's where I know you're making fun of us now.
A little bit of his personal life here. His personal life.
Oh.
Before the creation of United Artists.
That's how I knew it. United Artists is the name of my porn production company.
That's not good. You've got a United Ass. That means you're going to hit strife.
Yeah, that's not okay. Before the creation of United Artists, Chaplin married for the first time. The 17-year-old actress Mildred Harris had revealed that she was pregnant with his child, and in September of 1918, he married her quietly in Los Angeles to avoid controversy.
He's a silence film guy. That's how he does it.
He does everything quietly. He's one of those people that just, like, accidentally sneaks up on you. You know, he's always startling you because he's so quiet.
Getting you pregnant.
Yeah, he's always getting you pregnant.
Startling you. Oh, no.
Soon after, the pregnancy was found to be a false alarm. Chaplin was unhappy with the union, and feeling that marriage stunted his creativity, he struggled over the production of his film Sunnyside. Harris was by then legitimately pregnant, and on the 7th of July 1919, she gave birth to a son. Norman Spencer Chaplin was born, but unfortunately died 3 days later. He was quite ill. The marriage eventually ended in April of 1920, with Chaplin explaining in his autobiography that they were irreconcilably.
There's a sentence, a word missing from that sentence. Irreconcilably
mismatched. I just couldn't get the word irreconcilably.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Oh, really?
Hmm.
I couldn't say it.
Well, I think you're going to say that they were irreconcilable.
Oh, no.
I keep going to say it's irreconcilably.
Yeah. Mismatched. Isn't that what you were saying?
No, I was putting an in there. I don't know. I'm sorry. While making The Gold Rush, is that a movie title that you recognize?
Hmm.
Chaplin married for the second time.
Bridget Fonda. No?
No. Who are you thinking of? Bridget Fonda.
Sorry, yes.
That's who you're thinking of. Mirroring the circumstances of his first union, Lita Gray was a teenage actress.
Oh, my goodness.
Originally set to star in the film, whose surprise announcement of pregnancy forced Chaplin into marriage.
How old is he this time?
He was 35, she was 16.
Oh, no.
Why isn't that known?
It meant that he could have been charged with statutory rape under California law. So
I bet he wasn't.
He therefore arranged a discreet marriage in Mexico, and their first son, Charles Spencer Chaplin Jr., was born on the 5th of May 1925, followed by Sidney Earle Chaplin a few years later on the 30th of March 26, or the next year. 16 to 35. Like, what would you talk about, you know? You just don't have the same interests.
Well, they're both actors.
What are you doing at school? That's fucked.
That's fucked. I know. It was an unhappy marriage, and Chaplin spent long hours at the studio to avoid seeing his wife. Oh, it just hurts to read. It's not nice. In November of 26, Gray took the children and left their family home. A bitter divorce followed, in which Gray's application, accusing Chaplin of infidelity, abuse, and of harbouring perverted sexual desires, was leaked to the press. Chaplin was reported to be in a state of nervous breakdown as the stories became headline news and groups formed across America calling for his films to be banned. Eager to end the case without further scandal, Charlie's lawyers agreed to a cash settlement of $600,000, the largest awarded by American courts at that time. His fan base was strong enough to survive the incident, which is good, isn't it? And it was soon forgotten.
Oh, my God.
This is sort of forgotten and brushed over. But obviously Charlie was deeply affected by it, apparently. Before the divorce suit was filed, Chaplin had begun working on his new film, The Circus. He built a story around the idea of walking a tightrope while besieged by monkeys and turned the tramp into the accidental star of a circus. Filming was suspended for 10 months, though, while he dealt with the divorce scandal, and it was generally a pretty trouble-ridden production. Like, it was just a bit of a mess. It was finally completed in 1927, and the circus was released in 28 to a very positive reception. At the first Academy Awards, Chaplin was given a special trophy for versatility and genius in acting, writing, directing, and producing the circus. Despite its success, he permanently associated the film with the stress of its production, and he omitted the circus from his autobiography, and he hated the film. He struggled to work on he had to do like the score, re-recording the score several years later, and he like really struggled with that as well. He just doesn't even count it.
Wow.
Very weird. By the time the circus was released, though, Hollywood had witnessed the introduction of sound films. No longer sound films.
Or as they were known then, soundies.
Soundies. Very good. Chaplin was cynical about the new medium and technical shortcomings it presented, believing that talkies...
Oh, interesting. That must be the American term.
we call them soundies. Talkies lacked the artistry of silent film.
They're just a fad. Don't worry about it, mate.
Yeah, they won't last. They won't last.
Oh, I know. Like 3D film.
Yeah.
Or the internet.
He feared that giving the tramp a voice would limit his international appeal. Therefore, he rejected the new Hollywood craze and began to work on a new silent film.
Yeah, this guy gets it.
This makes sense. When filming began at the end of 1928, Chaplin had been working on the story for almost a year. And this one was called City Lights. And it followed the tramp's love for a blind flower girl and his efforts to raise money for her sight-saving operation. It was a challenging production that lasted 21 months, with Chaplin later confessing that he had worked himself into a neurotic state of wanting perfection.
Wow. For a guy that used to make a film a week, 21 months on one silent movie is a long time.
I think it's because they used to be really, really short, and now they're sort of feature-length, or they're longer.
Mm.
Yeah.
It's amazing to think that there was a time where people thought, yeah, these sound movies, talkies, as the Yanks call them,
they won't last.
It's so funny.
Yeah,
it's like now there couldn't have been anything more obvious than it was the death of silent film. But
what was the silent film a couple of years ago that won awards?
The Artist.
It was about me.
Was that really about you?
Yeah. I haven't seen it, but I assume.
Did
it
you
is.
Get any royalties from that?
Still bloody waiting, mate.
It's hard to talk to them. They won't say a word.
Yeah.
You know what those bloody...
Yeah, they do not reply.
They do not
reply. To my voicemail.
Voicemails. You leave a voicemail. All right, guys, it's me again. I'm wondering if I can have a bit of cash for that movie.
Call me back. Love you.
You know my number. Do you?
Do you know it? I won't say it.
Oh, yeah.
So this movie kind of, he worked himself into a real state, but it became his personal favourite of his films, and all through his life he sort of credited City Lights as his favourite. It was quite successful, but he was unsure if he could make another picture without dialogue, so he's learned his lesson. He's like, okay, so the talkies have stuck around. He remained convinced that sound would not work in his films, but was always obsessed by a depressing fear of being old-fashioned. Which I quite like.
Mate, this is exactly the kind of thing that will make you old-fashioned. Yeah.
That fear needs to really kick in.
Yeah. In this state of uncertainty, early in 1931, the comedian decided to take a holiday and ended up travelling for around 16 months. He recalled that on his return to LA, I was confused and without plan, restless and conscious of extreme loneliness. He briefly considered retiring and moving to China.
I mean, I've had brief thoughts like that, but I don't know how brief. Think about that for about 10 seconds.
Kind of go, could I retire? No.
Could
I'm
I retire
26.
And move to China?
I can't retire now.
No.
I
don't have any money.
I'm not sure I can pay rent. I probably can't retire yet.
How good's the Chinese exchange rate?
Yeah. Am I a millionaire in China?
Am I a millionaire in China?
You're Googling, where am I a millionaire? This is my bank balance. Where am I a millionaire?
That's a fun game.
That is a fun game. Actually, yeah, let's do that later. Anyway.
Million yen.
Yeah. How much is that?
Oh, thousands.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I don't have that. Oh, that's sad. Chaplin's loneliness was relieved when he met 21-year-old actress Paulette Goddard in July of 1932. So at least she's 21.
So has he divorced the... Oh, the other one's left. Sorry, she's gone. Big payout.
And they, like this, the pair began a successful relationship. Oh, that's nice.
After months of trying, it was finally a success.
He wasn't quite ready to commit to a film, and he focused on writing a serial about his travels. This is so good. Published in Women's Home Companion, which I just like to imagine is like New Idea or like Women's Day. And he's like, oh.
Women's Home Companion.
Home Companion. Dave, give us a porn. Give us a porn. Women's Home
Women's
Companion.
Women's Bone Companion.
There we go. You're getting it. Very good, Maddie.
Was that kind of it, Dave?
You've Women's written... Home Companion. Sex toy inside. There you go.
So following the release of his film Modern Times, Chaplin left with Goddard for a trip to the Far East. The couple had refused to comment on the nature of their relationship, and it was not known whether they were married or not.
So they go so far east that they arrived back home again?
Yeah, they just kept
going.
Oh, shit! They went so far east that they ended up slightly west.
Yeah.
Where did west and east start, Dave? Do you know that, about that? Like, where was seen as being...
The far east.
The middle east. Part.
Yeah.
Where they said east is that way and west is that way. Is that how it worked?
Yeah, I imagine Europe, because that's where everything was based around
right.
for centuries.
So the east, Asia's to the east of Europe?
Yep.
East.
I wasn't going to say anything.
And then the Middle East is between Europe and Asia.
Right. And then the west is just Europe?
Yeah, I guess that's west. But there's also east and western Rome.
Right.
That's going to be part of it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, because when it really spread and then
really
it
spread
split.
All the way east and then split. Yeah, maybe that's why.
So right. Anyway, they've gone on a whirlwind adventure. They're on a trip. They haven't confirmed whether they're married or not. Sometime later, Charlie revealed that they had got married during this trip. But by 1938, the couple had drifted apart as both focused heavily on their work. Although Goddard was again his leading lady in his next feature film, The Great Dictator. She eventually divorced Chaplin in Mexico of 1942, citing incompatibility.
He's not a good person.
He's done it again.
It's always weird when you have to state a reason.
Yeah. I don't want to.
Do I need one?
Yeah, why do you need a reason?
He says it's always irreconcilable differences. That's what they always
say.
That's
the classic. Which makes sense. That's why people break up. We can't.
Can't work out these differences we've got.
Yeah, but it is funny you got to put a word on it.
You've got to put a word.
Yeah, just don't want to.
Yeah.
Don't want anymore.
I'm over it.
I guess because of the legal thing.
I don't like him anymore. That should be enough.
Yeah. No more love.
Yeah, we don't love each other. It's probably not healthy for us to be together anymore. Pop that down. It's more concise.
I just read some old newspapers and found out that he's basically a child molester predator.
Mm.
And that, I just thought...
That upset me a little bit.
Charlie Chaplin, why is he still working or married to me?
Yeah.
Both of those don't sit well.
Big questions.
Could sum that up in one word. Incompatible.
There we are. See, it's more concise.
In brackets, with a pedophile.
Incompatible with a pedophile. The 1940s. We're finally there!
Oh, thank God he lived long enough for this.
The year was the 1940s, see? And Chaplin faced a series of controversies, both in his work and in his personal life, which changed his fortunes and severely affected his popularity in the United States. The first of these was a new boldness in expressing his political beliefs. Deeply disturbed by the surge of militaristic nationalism in the 1930s world politics, Chaplin found that he could not keep these issues out of his work. Parallels between himself and Adolf Hitler had been widely noted. The pair were born 4 days apart, both had risen from poverty to world prominence, and Hitler wore the same toothbrush moustache as Chaplin. No, by the way, they were never seen in the same room. So.
Really?
Oh, interesting.
Is it interesting, Dave?
Oh, God, I know. I was just waiting for it. Now, let me just say, I know... We made a lot of jokes on the show, but I've got a confession.
Dave, are you crying?
Yes.
Hey.
I have to come out and say that I am not a Nazi sympathiser.
What? What are you...
I know we've been playing along with it. We made a joke very early on, and I've had to play this character that's been dictated to me.
Dave, don't fuck with me on this. We've been talking about this for 86 weeks.
I've got to, no, I'm sorry, I've got to come out. I'm coming out of the closet, the Nazi closet. I'm not a Nazi.
You know, I always...
I'm so confused.
No, I always had my suspicions that
what?
He was going along with it for our benefit, and...
Why would you go along with it if you weren't
brave, because he's brave. And Dave, I just want you to know that regardless of this new news, that you are not a Nazi sympathiser.
Thank you, that is the truth.
I just want you to know that I love and accept you.
You still respect me.
Absolutely.
I'm still funny.
If not...
Without this little gimmick.
I think I accept you and respect you more.
For not being a Nazi.
Yeah.
No, to be honest, looking back, there were signs.
There were signs when we would make the jokes and he would protest. Was that the sign for
you? No, there were just times where he definitely could have shown signs of upholding the Reich and he didn't.
Mm.
He chose to be more.
Mm.
He did show love a lot of times when he could have shown hate, and I should have probably thought then that maybe he isn't who we thought he was, after all.
Yeah. So I mean, this is an exciting time. Let's move forward then with our chaplain report. And now, Dave, the fun part is if more Hitler references come up, you get to bloody pile on with us.
Great. I fucking hate that guy.
Yay! Nobody likes Hitler.
What a dick bag. Am I right?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm starting to...
Do you see it? Do you see it now?
Yeah, but I mean, was Hitler
man becomes the Nazi on the show. Please take this burden.
Was he though? Yeah, let's share it around. We'll take a year, 86 episodes each.
Oh, that'd be great.
Of being the sympathizer.
Love that.
Anyway, guys. Anyway, so. The physical resemblance, obviously, between them supplied the plot for Chaplin's next film, The Great Dictator, which directly satirised Hitler and attacked fascism. I mean, mate, you're a slapstick actor and you're really taking on the big issues. And I respect that. So he spent...
Also quite ironic, he's attacking fascism.
Yeah.
Good one.
He spent 2 years developing the script, and filming started in September of 1939, 6 days after Britain declared war on Germany. He had finally given in to using spoken dialogue, partly out of acceptance that he had no other choice.
but now he's going to speak German.
Yeah, but also because he recognised it as a better method for delivering a political message.
Is there anything but spoken dialogue? I guess there is, right? So the written stuff on the screen, that's still dialogue. Of course. Spoken dialogue sounded really funny. Like, yeah,
yeah, duh.
Yeah, the Academy Award for Best Script Displayed on the Screen.
Well, yeah, I suppose, yeah, because before there would have been, you know, when it came up with the title screens?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
that's still dialogue.
And he thought for a little while that was going to see off soundies.
Like, this is all we need. This is all we need. So
amazing. I wonder what he thought about colour. Because there were people, when colour came in, they said the same. They're like, it's a fad. Colour TV.
Yeah, probably, right? Yeah.
Genuinely.
Yeah, they did.
It's so funny.
Making it easier to call people on the other side of the world. Pff, bullshit. Mm-hmm. That'll never happen.
Why would you want to do that?
People won't adopt to that. Cheaper phone bills. Good one, mate. We're happy paying $600 a month.
Apparently, people thought mobile phones would never take off.
Mm, definitely.
Cell phones, yeah.
Well, they were just for business people.
That's right.
Yeah.
And then they had no idea that teenage kids.
We're bloody. I'm on them all day, mate.
I'm on it right now.
Just tapping away. Tap. I'm always on. I'm hacking the mainframe.
Some people still think that vaccines are a fad.
That's true.
They won't take off.
All right, let's not get into our own political.
Dave's about to
here.
Do another hot take. Here we go.
My hot take is that you should definitely vaccinate your child, and if you don't, you're wrong.
We've just lost 25% of our audience. I don't know why I picked 25%.
That's pretty high.
It is. You guys seem reasonable.
That's higher than standard.
Anyway, making a comedy about Hitler was seen as highly controversial, but Chaplin's financial independence allowed him to take the risk. He was like, well, whatever. He was determined to go ahead.
This is so good.
This is such a good quote. He goes, I was determined to go ahead, for Hitler must be laughed at. Probably didn't say it quite that triumphantly, but I think that's pretty funny.
And I agree. We should laugh at that now.
Yes, we should.
But
yay!
Not laugh at me.
So Chaplin replaced the tramp, but wore similar attire, with a Jewish barber who was a reference to the Nazi Party's belief that he was Jewish. For some reason, the Nazis thought Charlie Chaplin was Jewish. So he created this character as like a response to that. In a dual performance, he also played the dictator, Adenoid Heinkel, who parodied Hitler. Sorry, I was laughing at Adenoid.
Yeah, Ad. First letters, Adolf.
Adenoid.
Hitler.
Hinkle.
Very good.
Very
took
good
me a while
indeed
to crack the code. But also, wasn't Hitler a fan of Charlie Chaplin before this movie came out? I heard that he was hurt by it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was like, oh.
Oh, no, I just sympathised a bit with him. Oh, no. I can see how easily you fall into the trap. I thought that was kind of cute. I was like, oh, he was offended by it.
That's how he gets you.
Much like everyone else was offended by everything you did or stood for. So, okay. Which is, oh, because I imagine like a little cartoon, like kid Hitler, like, oh. Guys.
Mein friend.
I can see the cogs ticking in your head like, joke. There's a joke here. I can't get, there it is. Boom. The film generated a huge amount of publicity. A critic for the New York Times calling it the most eagerly awaited picture of the year. And it was one of the biggest money makers of the era. Made a lot of cash.
A lot of skrilla.
The ending was unpopular though, and generated a lot of controversy itself as well. Because Chaplin ended the film with a 5-minute speech in which he abandoned his barber character, looked directly into the camera, and pleaded against war and fascism. I don't know why I find that funny. Just like breaking character, just barrel the camera, just have a rant for
a second.
Have
you seen it? It's quite a long rant as well.
5 minutes.
Yeah.
That's a long rant.
That is a long rant.
She says over an hour into the podcast. The Great Dictator received 5 Academy Award nominations, including Best Picture, Best Original Screenplay, and Best Actor. In the mid-40s, Chaplin was involved in a series of trials that occupied most of his time and significantly affected his public image. The trouble stemmed from his affair with an aspiring actress named Joan Barry, with whom he was involved intermittently between 1941 and the autumn of 42. Barry, who displayed obsessive behaviour and was twice arrested after they separated, reappeared the following year and announced that she was pregnant with Chaplin's child. This just keeps on happening. He is a fertile little bugger, isn't he?
How old was she?
I'm not 100% sure, but she was not a teenager.
Sure.
Chaplin denied that the child was his, and she filed a paternity suit against him. This is a bit strange. The director of the FBI, J. Edgar Hoover, who'd long been suspicious of Chaplin's political leanings...
Oh, he was crazy, though. He suspected everyone.
He used the opportunity to generate negative publicity about Charlie Chaplin. So he's like, aha.
Ah, well, I've got you.
I've got you now, Chaplin. I don't know why he has that.
He's a supervillain.
He's a supervillain voice. So Barry's child, Carol Ann, was born in October of 44, and the paternity suit went to court the following February. After 2 arduous trials, Chaplin was declared to be the father. Evidence from blood tests, which indicated otherwise, were not admissible, and the judge ordered Chaplin to pay child support until Carol Ann turned 21. So they were still...
Yeah, what the hell are they doing it before DNA?
Yeah.
Looks like you. It's a boy, so are you. Well,
yeah, who are you getting in there as witnesses and stuff?
No, it was... So it was... There was... There were blood tests...
But they weren't shown, so they weren't...
That indicated he wasn't the dad.
Yeah, but they weren't... They were inadmissible.
Yeah.
Or whatever the word meaning.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah, so, I mean, what was the trial about if they weren't using science?
I don't know.
I also love that J. Edgar Hoover is suspicious of his leanings, even though he's done a 5-minute rant against fascism at the end of his film.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's what he was suspicious of. Maybe he thought he was a commie.
Media coverage of the paternity suit was influenced by the FBI, as information was fed to the prominent gossip columnist, Hedda Hopper, fucking good name, and Charlie was portrayed in an overwhelmingly critical light. So this was really damaging for him. Well, poor thing. The controversy surrounding Chaplin increased when 2 weeks after the paternity suit was filed, it was announced that he had married his newest protege, 18-year-old Una O'Neill, daughter of the American playwright Eugene O'Neill.
Oh, wow.
Chaplin, then 54, had been introduced to her by a film agent 7 months earlier. In his autobiography...
When she was 17.
Charlie described meeting her as the happiest event of my life and claimed to have found perfect love, brutal to the four ex-wives. Chaplin's son, Charles Jr., reported that Una worshipped his father. The couple remained married until Chaplin's death and had eight children over 18 years.
Eight more children. So he was a fan also of her father?
Yeah.
Eugene O'Neill?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
You know Eugene O'Neill?
Yeah, he wrote Long Day's Journey into Night, which I think is one of the best plays I've ever read.
Oh, cool.
I think he's a three-time Pulitzer Prize winner.
Dave, you watch plays, you don't read them, mate.
This guy. He's so embarrassing, isn't he? Chaplin claimed that the Barry trial had crippled his creativeness. I mean, he keeps blaming lack of creativity on anybody else. Like, mate, just own it. Sometimes we all go through ruts.
Get in the house of mirrors, bud.
Yeah, come on, mate. And it was some time before he began working again. In April of 46, he finally began filming a project that had been in development for a couple of years. It was called Monsieur Verdot, and it was a black comedy of the story of a French bank clerk who loses his job and begins marrying and murdering wealthy widows to support his family.
Sounds hilarious.
So funny. Well, his inspiration for the project came from Orson Welles, who wanted him to star in a film about the French serial killer Henri Désiré Landru. I'm
life,
so sorry.
Oh, life.
Désiré.
Oh,
life. Life.
Do, 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 do.
Mm-hmm. That's who it's about. Chaplin decided that the concept would make a wonderful comedy, and he paid Orson Welles $5,000 for the idea. There you go, Orson.
Wow.
Isn't that kind of cool? I think that's the main reason I wanted to keep that bit in, is because I like that he just bought the idea off Orson Welles.
I like that idea. Here's $5,000. Okay.
All right. Have fun.
Well, because you mentioned, you should do a movie about this guy. That's a great idea. I'd be pitching him ideas all the time. Just think, like, he picks
especially,
one.
Especially when he's in this rut of lack of creativity. He'd be taking anything.
Yeah, and he's like, here's $100,000. You're like, all thank right. you.
Thanks, deal. See ya. Again, he used this film to vocalise his political views, and he criticised capitalism and argued...
That's right. Criticised capitalism after paying $5,000 for a one-sentence idea.
Very good.
Fight the power.
Fight the power. Because of this, the film met with controversy when it was released in April of 1947, and he was booed at the premiere, and there were calls for a boycott.
Who goes to the premiere to boo?
I don't know. It was the first Chaplin release that sort of failed both critically and commercially in the US. It was more successful abroad, but it had definitely still affected his reputation in the States, but the screenplay was still nominated at the Academy Awards. So it's like... It was critically and everyone was like, this sucks, but it still got nominated. In 72...
Dave was saying that he helped set up the Academy Awards, right?
I think that he was, United Artists, that group.
So,
like Douglas Fairbanks.
Yeah, people on the inside.
I skipped over a section here where, don't ask me for the exact details, but basically he was denied re-entry into the States at one point and didn't go back for like 20 years.
I'm afraid I'm going to need exact details.
Ah! I said don't. It was just like there was already so much information and I'd grabbed so much. I was like, this report is going to go for 17 years if I don't just sort of skip ahead.
Right. So he's kicked out.
Yeah, he was kicked out of the States.
20 years.
Yeah. So
how long does he live?
Well, in 1972, the Academy of Motion Picture Arts and Sciences offered Chaplin an honorary award, which was sort of seen as America wanting to make amends because America kind of turned their back on him a little bit, and that's why he was denied re-entry and he just stayed away. So he was initially hesitant about accepting, but he decided to return to the US for the first time in 20 years. The visit attracted a large amount of press coverage, and at the Academy Awards gala, he was given a 12-minute standing ovation.
That's too long.
Man, I'd hate it. I'd want to sit down.
Sounds awful.
12 minutes.
That doesn't sound right.
It's the longest in the Academy's history. 12 minutes.
Usually they play you off after 25 seconds.
That should be the longest in...
in history?
What is this they is before learned. They were televising it, I'm guessing. Imagine just what... Sure. We're going to go to a break and we'll be back with more standing ovation in just a few minutes.
There's footage of it. I saw it on... I saw it on YouTube. He was like visibly emotional. He makes an acceptance speech. He accepted his award for the incalculable effect he has had in making motion pictures the art form of this century.
That's the name of the award?
No, that's just sort of the reason they gave him the award. Don't be a fucking smartass.
No, it's with yeah, it's just, when yeah. the award was just honorary award.
Yeah. So I wanna touch on a couple extra things, and I'll talk a little bit about his legacy. But the end is near, boys. By October of 1977, Chaplin's health had declined to the point that he needed constant care. In the early morning of the 25th of December 1977, Chaplin died at home after suffering a stroke in his sleep. He was 88 years old.
Wow, that's a long time.
He lived to 88. The funeral, which was a couple of days later on the 27th, was a small and private Anglican ceremony. This is I just find this a little bit weird. On the 1st of March 78, so a year after he'd not even actually, a couple of months after he was after he'd died, his coffin was dug up and stolen from its grave by two unemployed immigrants, Roman Wardus from Poland and Gancho Ganev from Bulgaria. The body was held for ransom in an attempt to extort money from Una Chaplin. The pair were caught in a large police operation in May, and Chaplin's coffin was found buried in a field in the nearby village of Neuville. It was reinterred in the cemetery where it had been found, and it was reinforced by concrete. People stole his coffin.
That's weird. That's
for
weird.
Ransom. But only a couple months after they'd buried him. It's
That's weird. He was already dead. He's not going to be able to pay that ransom.
No.
Dear Mr. Chaplin.
Thought this through.
They're just knocking on the coffin. Ready to pay up yet? We'll put you back in the ground. We just need $10 million. No answer.
God, he's stubborn.
God, he's played this game before. He is a silent man, after all.
He hates capitalism.
He's a silent man. I'll talk a little bit about his legacy to end with.
Fun legacy facts.
In 1998, the film critic Andrew Sarris called Chaplin arguably the single most important artist produced by the cinema, certainly its most extraordinary performer, and probably still its most universal icon. The image of the tramp has become a part of cultural history, so according to Simon Levish, the character is recognisable to people who have never seen a Chaplin film, and in places where his films were never shown. So the tramp is obviously his most famous work. Memorabilia connected to the character still fetches large sums in auctions. In 2006, a bowler hat and bamboo cane that were part of the tramp's costume were bought for $140,000 in a Los Angeles auction.
Wow, and he hated capitalism.
In the 21st century, several of Chaplin's films are still regarded as classics and among the greatest ever made. The 2012 Sight and Sound poll, which compiles the top 10 ballots from film critics and directors to determine each group's most acclaimed films, saw City Lights rank amongst the critics' top 50, Modern Times inside the top 100, and The Great Dictator and The Gold Rush placed in the top 250. That's kind of cool. In other tributes, a minor planet was discovered in 1981 and named after him. It's called 3623 Chaplin. That's pretty cool.
Wow, you got a planet named after him.
A planet named after him. From the film industry, Chaplin received a special Golden Lion at the Venice Film Festival in 1972 and a Lifetime Achievement Award from the Lincoln Center Film Society the same year. The latter has since been presented annually to filmmakers as the Chaplin Award, so it's now named after him. He was given a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame in 1972, having previously been excluded because of his political beliefs. But then they were like, we'll turn a blind eye.
So the political beliefs were the anti-capitalism commie stuff. He was some sort of a commie?
I don't know. I guess so.
Political beliefs. Or was it that he was anti-Hitler? Was it that stance he took in The Great Dictator? They're like,
yeah, they were like, come on, mate.
That's this enough. This is not how Hollywood
that is no good.
Behaves.
So that is the story of Charles Spencer Chaplin.
Well done, Jess.
Well done, Jess.
What a fascinating but also luckily controversial life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a real eye-opener.
Yeah,
I didn't realise I hated him until tonight.
Yeah, me either. But now I do.
Yeah.
Yay.
Yeah, glad he's dead.
The more you know. Now, of course, we'd like to thank everyone that listens to the show, anyone that's listened to this point. Also, we'd like to say a personal thank you to the people that support us at Patreon, patreon.com/dogoonpod, people that keep the show running with their monthly subscription. We appreciate that. You get bonus episodes. And we'd like to say a personal thank you now. Jess, you want to thank anyone? Anyone come to mind?
Absolutely. Thank you so much for asking. One of my favourite listeners of ours is somebody that I would really like to thank this week. And
I'm glad that you're finally getting a chance to do this, because I know this has been weighing on your mind and your heart.
Yeah, mostly my heart, to be honest. I'm looking forward to the feeling of relief. And I would really like to send a very special thank you to the one, the only, Kevin Spradlin.
That's a Spradlin.
That's a Spradlin.
You better believe.
So thank you, Kevin, for your undying support.
You know where Kevin's from?
Where?
Louisville, Kentucky.
Ooh.
I don't know heaps about it, but it's a great name that I've heard a lot. I think it maybe is where the Kentucky Derby's from.
Kevin can confirm.
Kevin can confirm or deny. Maybe also where the herbs and spices are from.
Yes, very good.
What do you mean, very good? How dare you?
Oh, my God, I can't win with you.
Mike, do you want to...
if I may, I mean, do we have time?
Hurry up
maybe,
and do it.
Maybe one more.
Okay, if we've got time for one more, that's great. Because I'd really like, only if we have enough time, to give me a chance to... thank this listener in the right manner.
Oh.
And that is with a big thank you to Eve Newton. She's a local Melbourneite.
Eve.
Which isn't what we're called. What do we call? Melburnians.
What are we called?
Eve, come on down. We'll get some pasta.
What?
Just an offer I'd like to extend.
Okay. Just for pasta? What if she doesn't want to get... what if she feels more like Mexican food?
Well,
or...
she fucked it.
Okay. Eve, the offer is for pasta and pasta only.
Yeah.
What type of pasta are you going to dictate?
Penne only.
Penne what? What type of sauce?
No sauce, just penne. I'm not rich.
Eve, don't come.
Are you calling that, is penne only your Newton's law?
Oh, that sucked.
I'll stop it.
That sucked.
Isaac Newton's fourth law was that you have to have penne. With no sauce.
Penne
thanks,
only.
Dave. Thanks for... taking that in the right spirit. Jess?
Yep.
You can get fucked.
Okay.
Dave, you got anyone you want to thank?
Well, to round out the episode, the best name of the week. No offense to Eve.
How dare you?
Or Spradlin, which is also two great names. But I would like to say, very on brand, I'd like to think that they changed their name via deed poll before they committed to being a Patreon supporter. And I would like to say a very big thank you to Matt Keen, in brackets for Peen.
Is he really? Is that how he spells his name?
Yeah. No, he does not. But yes, I imagine from now on, all his work buddies must call you Matt Keen for Peen, because
no,
we appreciate...
Dave, that's bullying.
What about Mustard Keen?
Oh, there we go.
Mustard Keen for Peen?
Oh, he's... okay.
That's a good compromise. Yeah. I think that's a good compromise.
Matt, I think you'll agree that if you change your name to Mustard, you'll be bullied a lot less.
That's...
Keen as Mustard for Peen.
But thank you so much for being part of the Patreon, Matt. Appreciate that a lot.
Matt, what a gun.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you so much.
Matt Keane is a great name. Matthew Keane.
Thanks, everyone, for listening.
And we seem to be very, very, very close to this tattoo goal that we have on Patreon. If we get to 2,000 a month, we will get a tattoo on either Jess or Matt. You get to vote who gets a tattoo. And if Matt is the winner, you get to vote for what tattoo he gets.
I've been having second thoughts about this.
I imagine you have.
As it creeps closer, it looked like it was a goal that was way out into the future.
This is years off.
You're an idiot.
Nah. Hey, vote for Jess, because I think she really wants this tattoo.
I really want it.
So why not do something nice?
Nah, they're not going to do something nice. They're going to put you in a fucked situation.
No, I disagree. I think our listeners are very nice.
We're not getting ahead of ourselves. We're not at the goal. But if you would like to contribute, we will be very, very close. And, of course, the ultimate goal of a U.S. tour.
Mm.
Oh, man. Man, we'd love to do that.
Ooh, baby.
Ooh, baby. We'll be...
ooh, baby.
Lewis? Louisville?
Every day. Yay, yay.
God, he always trumps us with that deep, deep voice. Well, as they sing you to sleep, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to say thank you for listening. Matt will be back with a report next week. And until then, hit us up on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. The links are in the description of the podcast, but it's at DoGoOnPod for everything. And DoGoOnPod@gmail.com if you want to email us. Matthew.
Hey, Jess.
Yes, Matt.
When you start the music at the end, can you make it start now? Dum, 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 dum. Dum 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 da dum 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 dum. That'd be really great if you could.
No problem.
Thanks, Eves.
All right, guys, until next week, I will say goodbye.
Laters.
Bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, marketers. Want a matchmaker to set you up with your perfect audience? Well, look no further. Get intimate right away with host-read sponsorships with Acast. Use Acast's self-serve ad platform to search and partner up with a podcaster or two from our network of more than 100,000 shows. Have them sing your praises in their own words. And get their listeners ready to be wooed into loyal customers. It's the ultimate loving endorsement. Book host-read sponsorships with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.